I'm Jeannie Holzbacher, and on behalf of myself and my fabulous co-host, Jill Wright, we want to welcome you to Executive Shine, Conversations That Count. We search the planet to bring you some of the most dynamic leaders in various industries who often only have one thing in common: uncommonly outrageous positive impact on people and businesses. They are leaving this world a much better place. So kick back and join us. Grab a few insights you can immediately apply to leverage your leadership and foster greater connection in a world that's become increasingly disconnected. They so desperately need you to shine your light bright. Cheers. Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode where Jill hit it out of the ballpark once again with another one of her co-authors in the Codes of Longevity book. We have Dr. Jackie Kilrain here. And Dr. Jackie, I got to tell you something. When I looked at your chapter on the coherence of gratitude, there were lots of things that stood out to me. But one of the reasons I'm so excited to talk to you tonight is in the very back page where it says, you know, you have a highly skilled way of solving complex problems using a very individualized approach. But it's that next sentence that got me. This approach is designed to restore energy, remove fear, regain clarity, and help clients look and feel 10 years younger. Where do I sign up?
That's right. I know, right? It's amazing. I love it.
So how in the world do you even go about breaking that down? So let's talk with removing fear. You know, this past year, I think we've seen a lot of fear.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And what I have found in my practice, and I treat a lot of chronic pain, and I didn't understand that a lot of chronic pain is, well, I do a lot of brain work, but we see ourselves, we live our lives through the different experiences that we have, through all the different traumas that we have. It just gets layered into our brain and into our environment. And a pandemic is a great example of it just turning up the volume just a little bit more and a little bit more in the brain. And then the brain just gets over anxious, hypervigilant, always on the lookout for a threat. And its only job is for you to survive. So every time you add something to it, a death, a loss, an injury, a pandemic, it just turns that volume up even a little bit more and a little bit more. And it wants you to survive. So it tends to make your brain and your whole system just be on that hyper state of alert and live in more fear and more caution and more, and it spreads not only to yourself, but to just about everything that you do. So, yeah.
So here's the thing. I actually have done, or I was just talking to somebody before the show who's doing a lot of work. I have a couple of interests. One of them is with human trafficking, helping to eradicate that. And so a lot of times we get these women that really started with trauma in early childhood that I'm assuming that trauma gets trapped in their cells. Definitely. And so what I have found, even in my professional environment, is a lot of times when you're in crisis, the skill set that works for you to survive doesn't work in order to help you thrive. You have to rewire that or change that. Is that true?
That's very true. I mean, it's interesting because that you say that, because when I look at, I started doing this because I treat a lot of chronic pain and it just didn't get better. I mean, I've been in practice for over 30 years and I'm a chiropractor by trade and I did a lot of body work, and my first chronic fibromyalgia patient that I treated, you know, I adjusted her like everybody else. And I'm like, did that feel better? And she's like, no, that doesn't feel better. I think I feel worse. And that kind of led me down the path of trying to figure out why it didn't work for her. But when we started digging deeper into it, I heard an anesthesiologist one time on a late night podcast say, we have to turn down the volume of the pain in the brain. And I'm like, oh my goodness, that's it. It was really situated in the brain. But the more I started working with the brain and people started getting better, I could really see that so much of the autoimmune things that I saw and so much of the chronic pain that I saw, and I do epigenetics for fertility, for someone who specializes in some fertility issues, it all goes back to that trauma. And that brain just, his only job is for you to survive. Even though my whole chapter is about gratitude and thriving and joy and all those things. That's not the brain's job. The brain's job is really for you to get up the next day. And if you get up the next day, even though you're fearful and you're in chronic pain and you have all these issues, it did its job. And you have to go back and change that. And that's what we do in our practice. And I didn't understand it till I experienced it myself.
So when you see patients that are the most successful at overcoming this pain issue, what are the things, are you seeing any trends or patterns in those kind of people?
Yeah, we step back and we look at them as a whole person. We don't just look at them as treating their pain, which is kind of what I was doing as a specialist before. I was like, okay, you're here for your fibromyalgia and you're here for your all over body pain. And I wasn't really taking a step back and looking at them as a whole system and a whole person. And now we understand that and we treat the whole person. But what I definitely see in very many of my clients is, especially women who are such caretakers, they'll not only have maybe chronic pain, insomnia, they have anxiety, they lay their head down and they can't shut their brain off. Or they have depression, or they just, they keep overthinking things, or they get hyperprotective. The helicopter mom who's hyperprotective of her children is really just hypervigilant, and she's always looking out for that threat too. We see that so often. When I started doing brain work on my clients with chronic pain, they'd come in and say, you know, I don't feel like I need my antidepressant anymore. I'm going to talk to my MD about getting off my antidepressant. And I'm like, I didn't know you were on an antidepressant because I wasn't really looking at that. Or I'm going to tell them I'm going to get off my anti-anxiety medication. And another thing that we'd see and why we have the program we have is they just started leaving that fear behind. So that overthinking is a lot of fear, and you can sit there and you can overthink things and you can talk yourself out of everything. And I did that. I felt like when I went through what I went through, I would talk myself out of everything. And I thought I was being very logical. I was a doctor. I thought, you know, this is a really good reasons why I'm not doing these things, but it was really fear-based. And what I see after they get free from that, and they can kind of leave behind what doesn't serve them anymore, because we understand the brain and the amygdala is really trying to keep us safe and it's trying to protect us, but we don't need that anymore. The things that we're thankful for getting where we are, but we can kind of dump that out and leave it behind and pick up what still serves us. And then the brain work that we do really helps them kind of leave that behind and just carve out a new life and be better them. You know, that's why it's called, we have a program called Rediscovering You. It makes them a better, you know, they kind of know who they are and what they want. So then they're able to serve in a lot better and happier and more joyful capacity.
So the neurofeedback helps you to do that.
Definitely helps you to do that. Yeah, it does. It's so simple. The technology is amazing. Your brain just controls what you're watching, and it corrects these dysregulated patterns, which can be that overthinking, that anxiousness, that there's different brain waves, a little science behind it, but it's just so simple. You're just really watching a screen and your brain's actually controlling what you're doing, and it's rewarding your brain when it's in a good pattern, and it's actually telling your brain don't do it like that. So your brain learns a new way to interact with the environment. When it learns a new way to interact with the TV that you're watching, it actually learns a new way to interact with the world and how you see it every day, and it just makes a tremendous difference.
I've actually had a whole month of neurofeedback where I had the equipment at my house, mm-hmm. and so that I could do it myself every day. And I'm telling you, it changes your life. It's really amazing what you can accomplish with that. And also, I also want to know, you talked a little bit about the coherence of gratitude. And so, mm-hmm. and also the heart brain connection.
Mm-hmm.
So right. How can our listeners, start to implement some of those strategies too on their own and build new habits that can support that kind of, building of the well-being?
Right. So your brain really doesn't know the difference between what you vividly imagine and what it's actually doing. And very often we get stuck in where we're at. And, you know, so a lot of my patients too would have chronic pain, or would just have, you know, we just get stuck in our own life and we can't imagine anything differently. But I would have them imagine their perfect day. So we imagine your perfect day so you can live your perfect life. Because if you can imagine it and you can see it, your brain's going to find a way to get there. So, but the first part, it sounds so easy. Imagine your perfect day. So I have a little journal that I wrote called Expressing Optima Journal. And the first thing that I have them do is write your perfect day. There's something to do with writing. So you can write it down. That helps imprint it in your brain. And then also I want you to vividly imagine your perfect day. Vividly imagine it with as many senses as you can. So how would it feel? What would it smell like? How would happy would you be? What would your emotions be? And then I also have them do that at night. I used to do it in the morning. And I used to get up first thing in the morning. And I still get up and write three things I'm grateful for in the morning. But now I have them imagine their very perfect, and I do it, imagine my perfect day at night before I go to bed, because I use the power of my theta brain waves, which converts your short-term memory into your long-term memory right before you go to bed. So you do this before you go to bed and you let the power of your theta brain waves and your gamma brain waves just infuse it into your nervous system and you sleep on it. And then it just starts to become you. And then you start to, just like you say, I'm going to get a purple car. And then you start seeing purple cars everywhere. Well, there's always purple cars out there. You just don't notice it. And your brain starts to, there's lots of studies with it too. There's nothing that I do that doesn't have some kind of science behind it. So there's studies that show if you're grateful and if you have a positive sense of, you know, well-being, that you start to see things as your cup half full and not half empty. And you start to, even things that are bad, you can start to see the positive that comes from it. It's just naturally what your brain does. So it just helps them rewire your brain. Doesn't have to be hard. You know, we think good health and gratitude should be really easy. It shouldn't be hard. We can learn how to do that. So that's why we do it at night. I kind of took my will and my ego out of it and let my brain do it. But that's a real easy thing that they can do. Just lay in bed for 5 minutes and vividly imagine how you want to be or what you want, or and with all your senses, kind of put it in there, and your brain will at night help to convert that to just part of you, and then you start to find it. Makes it easier. Makes you happier.
Yeah, it's amazing how powerful that is.
Yeah, they've even had studies that showed that gratitude, not only, you know, not only do you feel good, but people that were grateful and had that coherence of gratitude had less heart disease, had less cancer, had less diabetes, just by something being as simple as being happy and grateful, and writing it down seems to help to put that cement it in a little bit better. There was one study where they took a picture of a baseball team and they measured the smiles on the baseball players, and they measured the angle of the smile and those that were straight and how much they smiled. And then they followed these players throughout their life, and they used them. It was kind of interesting because they used them because they were all about the same age on the team. They were all really fit, so they had a lot of parameters that were very similar, and see how long they lived. And those that had a bigger smile live longer than those who didn't.
Really?
Too bad if you're having a bad day that day. Yeah. So it was just that they made some assumptions that must be their outlook on life, but it seemed to pan out. So it's very, very interesting.
That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I love that. You and Jeannie have both overcome a similar situation with the loss of your husband. So that is a very traumatic situation. And so did you employ those things at that time? Did you know? How did you learn this?
I did. I kind of stumbled into it. You know, when you're the doctor, you think you're fine and you don't think that you really need help. And so my husband died, and of course, we've been together for married for 25 years, been together since I was 17, and we dated for six. So it was a very long time. And he had cancer. And after a 2-year battle, he passed away. And so that next year, I kind of just jumped into my office, worked really, really hard. I probably had the best year that I'd ever had in practice, but only because I was kind of burying everything and kind of working, putting my nose down and just working. And then that year anniversary, I really fell apart. It just hit me really hard. And I felt discombobulated. So it's almost like the pandemic too. It was another trauma and it was another thing that just really kind of turned it all up for me. And I was going to quit practice. I was so anxious. I was so depressed. I remember looking at my employee best friend who had worked for me for 28 years, and something came out of my mouth and it didn't even make any sense. And we both just looked at each other and, you know, I was just nearly in tears and she didn't know what to say. And I called my brother-in-law up, my husband's brother, and his wife's an MD. And I said, she's a pediatrician. And I said, Andy, who does Angie send you to? I need something. I'm losing it here. So he sent me to his MD and I got on an antidepressant for a week. And then I happened to get my neurofeedback equipment in at that same time. And I didn't think I needed neurofeedback. I was doing neurofeedback for chronic pain patients. I had no chronic pain. I had no fibromyalgia, but nothing. I don't do anything in my office that I don't do myself. So I started doing it on me first and it saved my life. I mean, save my life. My brother-in-law said to me, Jackie, why don't you work one more year and then move out to California where your brother lives? And I said, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I love my practice. I'm going to quit my practice and I'm going to take my kids out of middle school. I had one in college and two in middle school, move all the way. I'm in Georgia, move to California and live out there with my brother who lives in a monastery. I mean, you know, what was I going to do?
Wow.
And that was what I was going to do. I was running and it made sense at the time. So I started and I thought, that's insanity. That's, you know, that doesn't even make any sense. But I was just trying to figure out how to survive. But after I started doing the neurofeedback, not knowing I was doing it to save my life, it did. And it changed everything. It got me back to where I was before. I kind of fell apart and then it just changed everything. And I got where, you know, what's that?
I've got to try this.
Yeah. You have to try it because I'm telling you, I look at everything in my life, pre neurofeedback and post neurofeedback, my experiences with, I don't have the fear I had before I get up and speak on stages. Now I was so anxious just to talk, like I wouldn't be sitting here talking. I would have had an anxiety attack. Don't do that anymore. I get up and lecture in front of, you know, 300 doctors and 300 other doctors. I didn't have the self-esteem to do that before. I wouldn't have done that pre-neurofeedback. So it really brought more of me out. And that's why we have that Rediscovering You program. I think everybody has a unique gift that they're supposed to offer to the world, that they want to offer to the world. And I felt like I gave away so many pieces of myself to my husband, to my kids, to my patients, to my community, that I didn't even know who I was anymore. I'd stand in my den and I remember I had to make a decision and I thought, and I'm a doctor. I kept my maiden name. My husband was a stay-at-home dad. It wasn't like I'm a wimpy girl, you know, but I remember standing there going, I couldn't make a simple decision because I didn't have anyone to ask, or I thought I needed this opinion. And it just took where I just dumped all of these beliefs out. And in my mind, I said, okay, look, I'm going to use this as an opportunity. If I can give up one thing, I can give up everything. If I can change one thing, I can change everything. And I started picking up what served me and I left the rest behind. And I said, you know, if I need to go back to that old way of doing things, I can do that. I'm really good at that old way of doing things and I won't forget, but I never went back. But it was all just clearing out all that trauma, all that, I didn't know, but yeah, so that's what we do. That's what we do in our office. We really help kind of heal people and then really get them out there to live their ideal life.
That's so beautiful. People can have hope.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's hope. It's exactly it. Yeah. You know, especially when you're chronically ill and I'm like, why do I see so many autoimmune patients? Women who have chronic pain, there's lots and lots of studies, chronic pain, brain problems with chronic pain, with overthinking, with anxiety, autoimmunity comes next, you know, so we help them heal. We help them get back to where they were. And they think they have so many multiple things wrong with them. So I have chronic pain. I need to see a chiropractor or somebody for this. I need to see a neurologist for this thing. I need to see a gastroenterologist for my gut issues. I need to see. So you feel like you're falling apart. But if we can step back and look at you as a whole person, we can say, you're not falling apart. We just need to fix you. And then, you know, you're better. So it does give them a lot of hope and they get better and then they thrive. I'm a much better person now than I was, even though I love my husband, than I was before. I would never go back to who I was before. Took that to kind of learn.
You said a really interesting piece in there too, and use different language, but you followed things that were life-giving.
Yes.
And that's even coming out of the pandemic, even for me, you know, my house burned down, my business got shut down, you know, all of these things went through a lot of trauma. And the way that I'm coming out of it the same way is to follow what's life-giving.
Absolutely. Yeah. If it doesn't bring me joy, I don't do it. And I don't, you know, I thought about changing my practice name forever. I mean, it was such a silly, it's not really a silly thing, but during the pandemic, I changed my sign, which was a big deal. People thought, God, did Dr. Kilroy die? Because it doesn't say, it says a totally different business name. And they were coming in, like driving by it, missing it. And I bought a house on the water. I just said, I'm just doing it. I bought it sight unseen. And I've been thinking about it for years. So through the pandemic, I just quit thinking about everything. I thought, okay, this, you know, if not now, when? I'm going to start not putting off my joy anymore.
Not putting off my joy.
Yeah, Jeannie's been talking about that same thing.
Yeah, I'm doing that right now, actually. And I'm dying to the whole, you know how sometimes you get into the patterns, they're so subconscious, you don't even know. Mm-hmm. And until you make, it's like Carl Jung says, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will rule your life and you'll call it fate. And so the last couple of years, I've done a deep dive on what I didn't even realize that's come to the surface was, why an addiction to people pleasing and getting my validation externally. And man, yeah. I've had to set some boundaries.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I've been there too. And I get it. That's a big one.
When I listen to you, though, I think of, I'm a nurse, and my first 6 years in my career was cancer treatment. My last many years have been all hospice and end-of-life care. I'm an executive that helps run the national program. And I sit there, and I look at, I'm dealing with people and leaders that I'm working with that are having crises with their staff or their patients they're caring for a lot. And I go back to many, many, many years ago, in the old days before we had all this cool stuff. I don't know if you've heard of Norman Cousins.
Mm-hmm, but sure.
Yeah, he had an autoimmune disorder that I can't describe, spondomyelitis or something. Mm-hmm. But the guy had severe pain and he didn't have all the stuff we have through people like you. And what he did is he went to the library and he checked out funny videos and inspiring, uplifting movies. And he gave himself high doses of vitamin therapy and got rid of his chronic pain.
I remember that. I remember reading that years ago. I started a study in my office too, where I just said, I want you to, we did a QEEG. So we just did the quantitative EEG brain scan beforehand. And I said, all I want you to do is 5 minutes every night. Imagine what brings you joy, what brings you the most joy, and feel like you're in that moment. I don't know, care if it's you at the beach or if it's you playing with your grandkids or playing with your dogs, but feel it with everything you can. What does it feel like? What does it smell like? I want you to imagine that for 5 minutes. Come back in 2 weeks and we're going to do another QEEG. We saw amazing changes in the frontal part of their brain where they're overthinking and they're anxious. And, you know, that's been so fun. I mean, you knew it could be, and it actually hasn't been done very much, I don't think. So, we'll have to recruit. If any of your readers
want
to
that's
be
really
study,
cool.
That would be awesome. It's amazing. And I knew, you just know it had to, it couldn't hurt anybody to sit there and imagine what really brings you joy. So, but it showed a real benefit, a real change on their brains pre and post. So, yeah.
Wow. Because we think that, but for you to back that up with the brain map and to be able to really document that, that's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love how it's different. You know, it's different for everybody. And that's what's exciting too.
For me, the price of admission, you've already mic dropped on me. Because my biggest takeaway tonight already, besides me, and I got to get in Dr. Jackie's office, my biggest takeaway is doing it the night before. I'm getting up in the morning and journaling, but the whole night before I think is going to be life-changing for me.
Yeah, I think so too. And when I read about short-term, long-term, and I really thought about it, I said, wow, why aren't I doing this at night? I'm trying to will it and use my fortitude to make it happen when it doesn't, we don't have to do that. We can just let our brain kind of do it. Just have to think about it before you go to bed, sleep on it. Like our mother would say, sleep on it. Yeah.
That's good. Well, we are almost ready to go to commercial. Why don't we take this little minute and go to commercial, and then we will be right back with more life-changing tips with Dr. Jackie.
Are you ready to be ageless and live limitless? Unlock your codes of longevity and discover how to age in reverse. Look and feel years younger, perform at your peak, and express boundless energy, vitality, and joy. This and so much more is possible because it's no longer a question of if we're living longer. We are living longer. The question is, how well do you want to live beginning today so that you can flourish and thrive at any age and any stage of life? This book brings together more than 20 of today's health and longevity leaders to share with you the secrets that exist within so that you truly can unlock your code and you can live your long life well beginning today. So now is your time to go to codesoflongevity.com to order your copy so that you truly can look, feel, and live life optimized to 120 and beyond.
Living to 120 and beyond is amazing. But my question to you is right now, I'm focused on after the what gives you joy and thinking about it the night before. Is that all part of the process that makes people look 10 years younger?
Yeah. You know, I think if you just take away a lot of that stress and worry and one good habit leads to another good habit. You know, it's you start to feel better. You start to be more excited about life. You start really kind of looking forward to every day. You start carving out more joy in what you do. You start leaving behind what doesn't serve you anymore. You start eating better. You start, you know, taking better care of yourself. You exercise. It's just everything kind of feeds into the next thing. And that's where people just beam and they do just look and feel better and they're more energetic. And it takes age away when you really are happy and joyful and not having chronic pain or aching or hurting or not sleeping because you're hurting and you're overthinking and you can't shut it off. So you just start optimizing your life and your health and you looks just come along with that.
That's amazing. This earlier today, I was on another Zoom call and we did an event, and one of the women, it's 2 months away from her 90th birthday.
Wow.
And every day we asked her, what is going on here? And she said, and every day I post on Instagram something life-giving. And I'm like, Seriously?
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's awesome. I love that.
But, you know, sharing those life-giving things too, I think, after you fill your own cup, just like you said, then I think you have that momentum, you have that extra energy to be able to spread it around instead of just, you know, looking externally for your happiness and validation. You know, it teaches you to find it from within. So I think that's amazing.
I think you do. And then I think when you radiate it, it just gets drawn back to you. You just attract other people. Like I met you and that whole group that we, you know, you just meet like people, and that's just life giving. It's so life giving. And you give it out. When you're able to give it out, you get it back. And, you know, I feel so much better now than I felt 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. I really do. And I have so much more joy for life now than I did before. And so much more energy. You know, I get up really looking forward to, because I started just leaving behind what didn't serve me in my practice anymore, what I didn't really like to do anymore. But I don't do that. I don't do lots of things that I might have said yes to before. I just don't. And that's not my, because it's not my purpose either. It's not like I don't serve. I do. I serve much better. Because I serve with a lot more joy and happiness. So I serve much more effectively too.
I think that's been the shift too. I mean, even on the planet, you know, mm-hmm. the one gift I told you, I wanted to ask you this question, like what was the one of the biggest gifts from the pandemic that came out of the pandemic? But I think for the world, it's a chance to slow down and to say, mm-hmm. you know what? I don't like that.
Right.
That's not life-giving to me.
Right.
You know, we're going in now, you know, transitioning with Executive Shine is going in and helping companies to build cultures where people want to come to work.
Right. I know.
Hello.
I know. I remember years ago, I ran into a childhood friend of mine. We've been friends since like elementary school, and I hadn't seen her in a few years. And I walked up to her, we gave each other a big hug, and I said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And she said, "Four more years." I said, "Four more years to what?" She worked for the city. I said, "Four more years to what?" She said, "Four more years, and I'm out of there." And I was like, "Oh, that's not good," you know, because I mean, I was on my way to her. That's how I ran into her, because I was getting a new business license to start Expressing Optima. So I was starting a new business, and she was just toiling away in something that she didn't like until she could have a new life when she could retire. And I'm like, I will never. And she's a beautiful girl. And I thought, wow, I wish you were living what you loved every single day. So I just make it a point to try to live what I love every single day. And I think the pandemic is much more, you know, you have to quit thinking about it now. I mean, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. What have you got to lose? Go ahead and, you know, do that thing you've been thinking, putting off, if you can. You know, now's the time. And it usually always works out, right?
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
It's so true. It's so true. And I think that was a big gift. What personally for you, what other lessons what other gifts came out of this for you? Did you discover maybe about yourself within your practice, your patients?
You know, I feel like when you let go of, well, I know when you let go of other things that weren't serving me, what I really wanted showed up. And when I really stopped overthinking, I love serving the women that I do. And when I quit overthinking and said, okay, I'm all in with this. I'm sorry. They just showed up. You know, they showed up and showed up and showed up, and that's my heart. And I love serving them. And so I feel like that was one of the gifts that showed up when I could let go, and I could do this forever. But I feel like just letting go of those things that didn't serve me anymore, let what I really love show up. And I'm with my whole heart with that. So, it's really been, for me personally, such a big growth year and such a transitional year that, I don't know if it was because of the pandemic, but I feel like, wow, I made a lot of shifts this year that I'd been talking about for a little while, that this just kind of pushed me into doing it, which were fantastic. I bought a house on the water. I thought about that for the longest time, you know, I'm just going to do it.
That's awesome. I want to come visit, huh, Jeannie? We got to go down and see her.
Yeah.
You get some girl feedback. We get some on the water.
Yes. I just did that with a friend this last week. We just kind of had a kayaking neurofeedback week. It was fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you wrote the chapter on the coherence of gratitude, what is it that, because I know is there a certain art form to simply just doing gratitude? Or does it work no matter how you do it?
I think it works no matter how you do it. If you actually feel it, then I think it works no matter how you do it. So I would start there. I wouldn't try to overthink, how do I feel grateful? I started myself keeping a gratitude journal when my husband was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And I started keeping it then because if I didn't find something to be grateful for, I thought I'd lose my mind. So I would write down, you know, the canary that I saw that I never really see here, my cup of coffee, you know, my help from my friends, or just simple little things really started to kind of build, trying to change my mindset and give me something to look forward to. And we really had a magical 2 years, even though he was declining. You leave so much negativity behind. But I think writing it, there is some science to writing it and actually not typing it in a computer, but actually writing it pen to paper makes a difference. And then I really like, trying to do more than just say it. Like, I'm grateful for I started to take my kids and my dog off the list because you could put them on there every day. So I'm like, okay, that's a given. I'll just tell my kids, if you find all my journals, you know, and you're not in it every page, it's because you're a given, but you know, I try to really feel it. So because we have a lot more senses than, you know, kind of just saying it and writing it down. I want you to really feel that emotion for it. I want you to use a lot more of your senses for it. And I think that kind of brings your whole nervous system into it a little more. But I don't think there's any wrong way. I think just get started. And then you can kind of layer in as much feeling and emotion and senses and imagination that you can, make it kind of fun. And not think, you know, there's, if you need some science, no, it's there. It's definitely there. But I almost taking you back to like a kid like mentality. You know, you're just gonna be like that kid that just can think that they can do anything. And I like to use that when I'm, you know, I put any limitations on my imagination. So I kind of put together the imagination thing and the gratitude. So you can be grateful for things, but then you can be grateful for things that haven't happened yet. There's lots of science with that. You know, there's lots of athletes, professional athletes, that would imagine winning the Super Bowl and picturing, you know, the race that they won. Michael Phelps would imagine the race every night ever since he started racing. And the time he set the world record, his goggles filled up with water and he couldn't even see the edge of the pool, but he imagined the race so many times he just knew where it was. And you know, they imagine the confetti falling and the, you know, so your brain just says, okay, well, it just expects it. So I just let your imagination run wild.
Oh, is that not beautiful? Imagination, here's the thing that I'm learning. Imagination and memory, learning to use it to work forward instead of just backward.
Yeah.
Because I think it was Alice in Wonderland, the queen asked her, so what is it that you're going to do in your magical day tomorrow? And Alice is like, I don't know, tomorrow hasn't happened yet. And she's like, oh, what a poor imagination that only works in one direction.
There you go, exactly. I love that. Yeah.
It's kind of like a Back to the Future.
That's
at
so
the
true.
Future,
yeah.
Exercise.
Yeah, and you could definitely create that. Like, you know, your brain really doesn't know the difference. It'll start to try to make, they did studies where they had someone who was actually learning a new piano piece and practicing it. And then they had another group of people who was just imagining that they were playing the same piano piece. And then they had people who didn't do either. And the people that imagined it and actually played it actually had, you know, the same synapse areas in their brain that were developing, trying to learn the music. So, you know, they definitely made changes in their brain just by imagining it, just like the people who were practicing it. Finger exercises, one imagining it and one actually doing it. And they measured the finger later. And the ones who imagined it had a bigger, you know, growth in their finger, in the muscles, just from imagination. So I can imagine that I'm losing this 20 pounds that I gained.
Amen.
Yeah, let's do that study.
I even heard a story about with neuroplasticity and all the good talk. I heard a story about a guy who was maybe a prisoner of war with John McCain, but I'm not sure about that fact. But the fact I am sure of is he was a prisoner of war for like 6 or 7 years. And obviously he didn't play golf during that time. But when he was in solitary confinement, every day he imagined himself doing 18 holes. And 6, 7 years later, when he got out, his golf game was barely, his score was barely any different than it was before he went into war.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. I believe it 100%. Yeah. Amazing. And you know, it's so simple. I mean, we don't, you know, I do a lot of neurotechnology in my office, which is amazing, and it really speeds things along. But those basic things, I mean, that's how we're designed. You know, we can do so much of it with imagination and with gratitude and with just feeling joy and making sure you take time to imagine what that feels like every single day, because we can get so busy and stressed and forget to do that. And it can make such a big impact if we just take that
like
time.
Making white space. I mean, everybody has their own energy signature that they bring into a room. And listening to you and talking to you, and this is the first time we've ever met, but you know how you come across to me? You come across very calm and comforting.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you.
Must be all that great biofeedback.
Yeah.
I told her energy's like warm honey, you know?
Uh-huh. Great analogy, Jill.
And it's just like, it's soothing. And, you know, I think that really people can feel that, you know. I teach my people at work when we're walking by like the different businesses, I'm like, tell me what the energy is that you feel from this business. Do you want to go in or not? You know, so we learn, we play around with that. And I'll teach new people and I'll say, now you guys stand over there and I'll text them what I want them to act like. I'll just like be angry or something. And then I'll ask my new person, tell me what they're feeling.
Wow.
Because you can feel it.
You can. You can. You definitely can. Isn't that the truth?
You can feel it, you can change it. Because right at the point when I came into the airport, I'd had a day from hell, a travel day from hell. And I was exhausted and tired and crabby. And I got to Jill's place. And like the first 3 minutes, I was still de-stressing. And, you know, they're doing the foot rub. Jill's getting me a smoothie. I'm around loving people. I hear them talking to another guy. You know, within 5 to 10 minutes, I'm a different woman.
Yeah, you know it. Isn't that truth? You know, I said my kids and I were talking. We were talking about, I was talking about how different I felt since I had done neurofeedback and some of the things that I did. And my middle son, who's really quiet, doesn't say a lot, very sweet. He said, "Yeah, Mom." He said, "You're not angry anymore." And I was like, "Oh." I said, "Was I angry?" And you know, he's so sweet. He's like, "Well, you know, I mean, you know, well, I was." And I think about how stressed I was. And, you know, this is like before my husband really got sick. And, you know, I was just, I just wasn't living in the same space. So, you know, you see me now, I don't think I know I wasn't always like that. But yeah, so you can change it. You can definitely change it. I let so much of that go. I just changed the whole, my whole space and my whole energy and how I feel. And I know if anybody can do it, it doesn't, it's not, but yeah, it makes a big difference. And it makes, and it makes a big difference on how I get up and move through every single day. Definitely. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking earlier today in the event I did earlier today, we featured someone and I was talking about impact and mm-hmm. I said, you know, the greater the trauma that you've gone through in your life, I believe the greater your capacity to impact. Mm. And when you've gone through those things and you've chosen that you're going to use those things to catapult you, you're going to choose more positive thoughts, you're going to make those positive decisions and choose to be grateful and choose to think of those things that bring you joy. And it makes a big difference. And I think that then you impact the world in a bigger way, because if nothing ever happens to you, you're kind of shallow, you know, like, yeah, I've had a great life. Everything's been perfect. Yeah. I want to learn from you. You know,
that is so true.
People who've been through hell and back that have something, if they've chosen to work through some of that, that have something to bring to the table, like nothing, they're my people. They're like nothing I've ever experienced.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. I know if I hadn't been through what I did, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. I wouldn't have met so many wonderful people. I wouldn't have the joy I have in the people that I serve. You know, you're always trying. I was always trying, but I didn't really get it till it happened to me, and I couldn't understand. You know, when it happened to me, and I could step back and kind of see, it was just a whole different picture when you're at your bottom and think, you know, like I was going to run away to my brother in a monastery. I mean, you know, just didn't make any sense. So, but if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. You know, it's almost, yeah. And I feel like, you know, that's how it was just meant to be. My husband and I served each other for as long as we were meant to serve each other. And it was time for him to move on to something else. And it was time for me to grow and, you know, figure out like I did. It made so much sense. It made it so much easier for me to heal and to understand that, because I know I wouldn't have grown anymore had that all not happened.
Yeah. I've experienced the same thing. You know, with like, I've been in business 33 years, you know, like you.
Me too.
How, shut me down? Like, what are you talking about, Willis? You know, like, you got to be kidding me. And if that wouldn't have happened, I don't think it would have pushed me into these new areas, because there's really a lot more impact that I can make in the world in doing things and helping people have those kind of cultures where people like coming to work, where the bosses aren't worried about it because their employees love their job. People ask me all the time, they're like, what do you do? Like, what's your secret? And I said, they're like, your people work for you for 20 years. What's your secret? Well, Jeannie experienced that this weekend. And I said, I don't know. I just love them.
I know. The secret is very simple. It's connection. It's saying, I value you enough to find out who you are and what matters to you.
Yeah. That's beautiful. And people spend so much time at work that it should be a joyful place for them. It has to be. It can't be. It just can't be something that you're four more years like my friend. You know, that I can't even imagine that existence.
You can teach a lot of strategy and a lot of things. And I work for Fortune 27. So strategy, stats, all that's there. But at the end of the day, the bottom line is it means nothing if the heart isn't set right and the character isn't set right first. Because you know what? People can smell a fake from a mile away and it's not a fragrant aroma.
It's so true. Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I also wanted to mention is I know you have three boys.
Yes.
And, you know, there's so much going on with, I know they're a little bit older now. They're not so young, but but there's so much going on with youth and with the kids this year with the schools and so for parents that are listening, like, what are things that you did with your boys to really help them? I mean, you had to help them go through all of this in addition to handling this for yourself.
Yeah, I did. And I feel like I feel like, you know, with boys, you say that, and this was, looking back, I wish I would have done more, but I felt like we were all dog paddling. We were all just trying to keep our head above water. And I'd probably say to my boys, you know, are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. Are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. And I didn't say, are you sure you're okay? Let's sit down and talk about it. When they said, yeah, I'm okay, mom, which boys will say, fine, I'm fine. You know, and I think they were more protective of me. And I couldn't handle so much until like that year after. So you have to take care of yourself. You really have to take care of yourself. Once I started really taking care of myself and understanding that I was struggling and I needed help and I needed to, then I could care for my children. Then I could make sure that they were getting, you know, the care that they needed. So I think the first thing, because I remember I started doing, I had yoga at my office and it would make me come home like 30 minutes later, but I came home 30 minutes later, but I was a calmer. I could give more to my children. So I think really taking care of yourself when you're going through a stressful, everyone is going through a stressful situation, then you're better able to see and help them. We do see a lot more with kids being home and not having contact and just being on, you know, more media and social, you know, the computers and not interacting. We see a lot more anxiety and a lot more stress and a lot more younger people. So I think just getting out as much as we can and you know, communicating. But I think the first thing is really taking care of yourself so you can better help your children.
Well, you're an example for them.
Yeah, for sure. You know? And you know, I didn't have the capacity to, I mean, I was there, but I just didn't have the capacity to be calm enough to listen to, you know, to be, you know, to observe more. I couldn't see it as well until I was healing myself too. So you do have, like, the, you know, putting the air on yourself first before you put it on your child. You just kind of have to do that. You have to really kind of, and don't feel bad about that, because you're really serving them by taking care of yourself too.
Yeah,
that's what I had to do.
Yeah. It's a beautiful story. I mean, you've been through so much, and now you're giving back in such a big way, and that's what we like to have, is people on the show who are really shining brightly, you know, doing great things in the world, in their little corner of the world, and making a difference. And that's what it's about, is you don't have to be, you know, on a world stage.
Right.
You know, you can make a difference in your own special area. You know, that's where God planted you.
Right.
So bloom there.
Yeah, absolutely. We just started talking about the trauma before. We just started a nonprofit called the Free Brain Initiative, trying to really help women who have been victims of abuse or gone through the prison system. Now that we really understand how much trauma is involved in epigenetically what gets passed down to their children and how they kind of live their life, just working on helping these people heal their brains and heal so that it's not getting passed down to their children, and so that they can break these cycles and live a more fulfilling life. So that's one thing that kind of came out of the pandemic. I noticed it's another trauma. We just need to get out and serve more people and start healing it in the way that we know how, you know?
Yeah. Where can they find out about all of that on your website? Then I put that in the, on the show page about you, but let our listeners know about your website.
Okay. Yeah. It's expressingoptima.com is our website. They can find out about that there. Maybe not the Free Brain Initiative. We're just getting that started. So, I'll have to get that up there for everyone to see. We just started it finally, but it's just getting rolling. But I think it'll be hopefully we can get more more different providers involved too. You know, I love what I do and I do neurofeedback, but we could use other providers to help with that too.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. You were such an amazing guest. What a blessing you are.
Oh, it's so great to be here with you. It's so great to see you too. Nice to meet you too.
Well, thank you for sending your warm honey our way. It's been a great show.
All right. See you next week, everyone.
Thank you so much.